the police. If you won't talk to me, maybe you'd like to talk to them. Maybe they've seen the branding before. I can tell just by looking at it that it isn't good. My voice was calm, but my underarms were damp. What a stupid and risky thing to say. What if Scott didn't allow me to leave? I obviously knew enough about the Black Hand to upset him. Did he think I knew too much? What if he killed me, then threw my body in a dumpster? My mom didn't know where I was, and everyone who'd seen me enter Scott's apartment was wasted. Would anyone remember having seen me tomorrow? I was so busy panicking I hadn't noticed Scott had taken a seat on the bed. His face was bent into his hands, his back was quivering, and I realized he was crying silently, great convulsive sobs. At first I thought he was faking, that this was some kind of trap, but the choked sounds low in his chest were real. He was drunk, emotionally unhinged, and I didn't know how stable that made him. I held still, afraid one slight movement might cause him to snap. "I racked up a lot of gambling debt in Portland," he said, his voice scratchy with desperation and exhaustion. "The manager at the pool hall was breathing down my neck, demanding the money, and I had to watch my back any time I left the house. I was living in fear, knowing one day he'd find me and I'd be lucky to get off with broken kneecaps. One night on my way home from work, I was jumped from behind, dragged into a warehouse, and tied to a folding table. It was too dark to see the guy, but I figured the manager had sent him. I told him I'd pay him whatever he wanted if he'd let me go, but he laughed and said he wasn't after my money. In fact, he'd already settled my debts. Before I could figure out if it was his idea of a joke, he said he was the Black Hand, and the last thing he needed was more money. He had a Zippo, and he held the flame against the ring on his left hand, heating it. I was sweating bullets. I told him I'd do whatever he wanted, just get me off the table. He ripped open my shirt and ground the ring into my chest. My skin was on fire, and I was yelling at the top of my lungs. He snapped my finger, broke the bone, and told me if I didn't shut up, he'd move down the line until he broke all 10. He told me he'd given me his mark. Scott's voice had dropped to a rasp. I wet my pants. Right there on the table. He scared the hell out of me. I'll do whatever it takes to never see him again. That's why we moved back to Coldwater. I'd stopped going to school and was hiding out at the gym all day, bulking up in case he came looking for me. If he found me, this time I was going to be ready. Cutting off there, he wiped his nose with the back of his hand. I didn't know if I could trust him. Patch had made it clear he didn't, but Scott was shaking. His complexion was pasty, misted with sweat, and he plowed his hands through his hair, letting go of a long, wavering breath. Could he make up a story like that? All the details meshed with everything I already knew about Scott. He had a gambling addiction. He'd worked nights in Portland at a convenience store. He'd moved back to Coldwater to escape his past. He had the branding mark on his chest, proof someone had put it there. Could he sit 2 feet away and lie to me about what he'd gone through? "What did he look like?" I asked. "The Black Hand." He shook his head. "It was dark. He was tall, that's all I remember." I groped for some way to connect Scott and my dad, both of whom were linked to the Black Hand. Scott had been tracked down by the Black Hand after running up debt. In exchange for paying off Scott's debt, the Black Hand had branded him. Had my dad gone through the same thing? Had his murder not been as random as the police originally guessed? Had the Black Hand paid off a debt my dad owed, then killed him when my dad refused to be branded? No, I wasn't buying it. My dad didn't gamble and he didn't rack up debt. He was an accountant. He knew the value of money. Nothing about his situation tied him to Scott. There had to be something else. "Did the Black Hand say anything else?" I asked. "I try not to remember anything about that night." He reached under his mattress and pulled out a plastic ashtray and a pack of cigarettes. He lit up, exhaling smoke slowly, and closed his eyes. My mind kept rebounding to the same 3 questions. Had the Black Hand really killed my dad? Who was he? Where could I find him? And then a new question. Was the Black Hand the leader of the Nephilim Blood Society? If he was the one branding Nephilim, it made sense. Only a leader, or someone with a lot of authority, would be in charge of actively recruiting members to fight back against fallen angels. "Did he say why he gave you his mark?" I asked. Clearly the branding was to mark members of the Blood Society, but maybe there was more. Something only its Nephilim members knew. Scott shook his head, taking another drag. He didn't give you any reason?
No,
Scott snapped. Has he come looking for you since that night?
No.
I could tell by the wild look in his eyes that he was scared he wouldn't always be able to say as much. I thought back to the Z, to the red-shirted Nafil. Did he have the same brand as Scott? I was almost certain he did. It only made sense that all members had the same mark, which meant there were others like Scott and the Nafil at the Z. Members everywhere, recruited by force, but disjointed from any real strength or purpose because they were kept in the dark. What was the Black Hand waiting for? Why was he holding off uniting his members? To keep Fallen Angels from finding out what he was up to? Was this why my dad was murdered? Because of something that had to do with the Blood Society? Have you ever seen the Black Hand's brand on anyone else? I knew I was in danger of pushing too hard, but I needed to determine just how much Scott knew. Scott didn't answer. He was crumpled on the bed, passed out. His mouth was agape, and his breath smelled strongly of alcohol and smoke. I shook him gently. Scott? What can you tell me about the Society? I slapped his cheeks gently. Scott, wake up! Did the Black Hand tell you that you're Nephilim? Did he tell you what it means? But he had crashed into a deep, inebriated sleep. I ground out his cigarette, pulled a sheet up to his shoulders, and let myself out. Chapter 15. I was deep in a dream when the phone shrilled. I stuck an arm out sideways, swept my hand over the nightstand, and located my cell phone.
Hello?
I said, wiping drool from the rim of my mouth.
Have you checked the Weather Channel yet?
V asked.
What?
I mumbled. I tried to blink my eyes open, but they were still rolled back in the dream.
What time is it? Blue skies, sizzling temps, zero wind. We are so going to Old Orchard Beach after class. I'm packing boogie boards in the neon right now.
She belted out the first stanza to Summer Nights from Greece. I cringed and pulled the phone away from my ear. I rubbed sleep out of my eyes and watched the numbers on the clock seesaw into focus. That couldn't possibly be a six at the front, could it?
Should I wear a hot pink bandeau or a metallic gold bikini? The thing about the bikini is I probably need a tan before I wear it. Gold will make my skin look even more washed out. Maybe I'll wear pink this time, get a base tan, and...
Why does my clock say 6:25? I demanded, trying to wade through the haze of sleep long enough to push some volume into my voice.
Is this a trick question?
V!
Yeesh, angry much?
I slammed the phone down and snuggled deeper under the covers. The home phone started ringing downstairs in the kitchen. I folded my pillow over my head. The answering machine picked up, but V wasn't that easy to get rid of. She redialed. Again and again. I speed-dialed her cell.
What? Gold or pink? I wouldn't ask if it wasn't important. It's just, Rickson's going to be there, and this is the first time he'll see me in a swimsuit.
Back up. The plan is for all three of us to go together. I'm not going all the way out to Old Orchard Beach to be the third wheel.
And I'm not going to let you sit home all afternoon with your sour face on.
I don't have a sour face.
Yes, you do, and you're wearing it right now.
This is my annoyed face. You woke me up at 6 in the morning. The sky was summer blue from horizon to horizon. The neon's windows were rolled down, a hot wind ripped through V's and my hair, and the heady smell of salt water filled the air. V exited off the highway and drove down Old Orchard Street, eyes peeled for parking. The lanes on both sides of the street were backed up with slow-moving cars that rolled along well under the speed limit, hoping for a spot to open up on the street before they slipped past and lost their chance.
"This place is packed," V complained. "Where am I supposed to park?"
She steered down an alley and slowed to a stop behind a bookstore.
"This looks good. Lots of parking back here."
"The sign says employee parking only."
"How are they going to know we aren't employees? The neon blends right in. All these cars speak low class."
"The sign says violators will be towed."
"They just say that to scare people like you and me away. It's an empty threat. Nothing to worry about."
She wedged the neon into a space and cranked the parking brake. We grabbed an umbrella and a tote filled with bottled water, snacks, sunscreen, and towels out of the trunk.
then hiked down Old Orchard Street until it dead-ended at the beach. The sand was dotted with colorful umbrellas, the frothy waves rolling under the twiggy legs of the pier. I recognized a group of soon-to-be senior guys from school, playing Ultimate Frisbee just ahead. "Normally I'd say we should go check out those guys," V said. "But Rixon is so hot, I'm not even tempted." "When is Rixon supposed to get here, anyway?" "Hey now, that didn't sound very cheerful. In fact, it sounded just a little bit cynical." Shielding my eyes, I squinted at the coastline, looking for an ideal place to pitch the umbrella. I already told you I hate being the third wheel. The last thing I needed or wanted was to sit under a hot sun all afternoon, watching V and Rixon make out. For your information, Rixon had a few errands to run, but he promised to be here by 3. What kind of errands? Who knows? Probably Patch roped him into doing a favor. Patch always has something he needs Rixon to run off and take care of. You'd think Patch could just do it himself, or at least pay Rixon so he's not taking advantage of him. Do you think I should wear sunscreen? I'm going to be really mad if I go to all this trouble and don't get a tan. Rixon doesn't seem like the kind of guy who lets people take advantage of him. People? No. Patch? Yes. It's like Rixon worships him. It's so lame. It makes my stomach heave. Patch is not the kind of guy I want my boyfriend aspiring to be. They have a long history together. So I've heard. Blah, blah, blah. Probably Patch is a drug dealer. No, probably he's an arms dealer and has Rixon out playing the sacrificial mule, gun-running for free and risking his neck. Behind my knock-off Ray-Bans, I rolled my eyes. Does Rixon have a problem with their relationship? No, she said, all huffy. Then leave it at that. But V wasn't about to let it go. If Patch isn't dealing in arms, how's he get all his cash? You know where he gets his money. Tell me, she said, folding her arms stubbornly across her chest. Tell me out loud where he gets his money. The same place Rixon gets his. Uh-huh, just as I thought. You're ashamed to say it. I gave her a pointed look. Please, that's the dumbest thing ever. Oh, yeah? V marched up to a woman not far away who was building a sandcastle with 2 small children. Excuse me, ma'am. Sorry to interrupt your quality beach time with the little ones, but my friend here would like to tell you what her ex does for a living. I clamped my hand around V's arm and dragged her away. See? V said. You're ashamed. You can't say it out loud and not feel your insides start to rot. Poker. Pool. There, I said it and I didn't shrivel up and die. Satisfied? I don't know what the big deal is. Rixon earns his living the very same way. V shook her head. You're so in the dark, girl. You don't buy the kind of clothes Patch wears by winning bets at Beau's Arcade. What are you talking about? Patch wears jeans and t-shirts. She put a hand on her hip. You know how much jeans like that run? No, I said, confused. Let's just say you can't buy jeans like that in cold water. He probably ships them up from New York. $400 a pair. You lie! Cross my heart, hope to die. Last week he was wearing a Rolling Stones concert t-shirt with Mick Jagger's autograph. Rixon said it's the real thing. Patch isn't paying off his MasterCard in poker chips. Back before you and Patch were Splitsville, did you ever ask where he really gets his money? Or how he got that nice, shiny Jeep? Patch won his Jeep off a poker game, I argued. If he won a Jeep, I'm sure he could win enough to buy a pair of $400 jeans. Maybe he's just really good at poker. Patch told you he won the Jeep. Rixon has a different story. I flipped my hair off my shoulders, trying to pretend like I couldn't care less about the direction our conversation was headed, because I wasn't buying it. Oh yeah? What's that? I don't know. Rixon won't say. All he said was, Patch would like you to think he won the Jeep, but he got his hands dirty getting that car. Maybe you heard wrong. Yeah, maybe, V repeated cynically. Or maybe Patch is a damn lunatic running an illegal business. I handed her a tube of sunscreen, maybe just a little too hard. Put this on my back and don't miss any areas. I think I'm going straight to oil, V said, slapping sunscreen across my back. A little burn is better than spending a whole day at the beach, and leaving it as white as when you came. I craned my neck over my shoulder, but couldn't tell how thorough V's job was. Make sure you get under my straps. Think they'd arrest me if I take off my top? I really hate tan lines. I spread my towel under the umbrella and curled up beneath its shade, rechecking to make sure my feet weren't hanging out in the sun. V shook her towel out a few feet away and lathered her legs with baby oil. In the back of my mind, I conjured up images of skin cancer I'd seen at the doctor's office. "Speaking of Patch," V said, "what's the latest? Is he still hooked up with Marcy?"
"Last I heard," I said stiffly, thinking the only reason she'd raised the question was to goad me further.
"Well, you know my opinion."
I did, but I was going to hear it again, whether I wanted to or not.
"The two of them deserve each other," V said, spraying sun in through her hair, misting the air with chemical lemon. "Of course, I don't think it will last. Patch will get bored and move on, just like he did with..."
"Can we talk about something other than Patch?" I cut in, pinching my eyes closed and massaging the muscles on the back of my neck.
"You sure you don't want to talk? Looks like you've got a lot on your mind."
I rolled out a sigh. No use hiding it. Obnoxious or not, V was my best friend and deserved the truth, when I could give it.
"He kissed me the other night, after the devil's handbag."
"He what?"
I pressed the heels of my hands into my eyes.
"In my bedroom." I didn't think I could explain to V that he'd kissed me inside my dream. The point was, he had. Location was irrelevant. That, and I didn't want to even think about what it meant that he now seemed capable of inserting himself into my dreams.
"You let him inside?"
"Not exactly, but he came in anyway."
"Okay,"
V said, looking like she was struggling to come up with a decent response to my idiocy.
"Here's what we'll do. We're going to swear a blood oath. Don't give me that look, I'm serious. If we swear a blood oath, you'll have to keep it or something really bad will happen. Like rats might gnaw off your feet while you're sleeping. And when you wake up, all that will be left are bloody stumps. Do you have a pocket knife? We'll find a pocket knife, and then we'll both cut our palms and press them together. You'll swear never to be alone with Patch again. That way, if temptation strikes, you'll have something to fall back on."
I wondered if I should tell her that being alone with Patch wasn't always my choice. He moved like vapor. If he wanted alone time with me, he was going to get it. And though I hated to admit it, I didn't always mind. "I need something a little more effective than a blood oath," I said.
"Babe, get a clue. This is serious stuff. I hope you're a believer because I am. I'll go hunt down a knife," she said, starting to rise to her feet.
I pulled her back down. "I have Marcy's diary."
What?
V sputtered. "I took it, but I haven't read it."
"Why am I just now hearing about this? And what is taking you so long to crack that baby open? Forget Rickson, let's drive home right now and read it. You know Marcy's talked about Patch in it."
"I know."
"Then why the delay? Are you scared about what it might reveal? Because I could read it first, filter out the bad stuff, and just give you answers straight up."
"If I read it, I might never speak to Patch again."
"That's a good thing."
I looked sideways at V. "I don't know if it's what I want."
"Oh, babe, don't do this to yourself. It's killing me. Read the stupid diary and allow yourself closure. There are other guys out there. Just so you know, there will never be a shortage of guys."
"I know," I said, but it felt like a cheap lie. There had never been a guy before Patch. How could I tell myself there'd be one after? "I'm not going to read the diary. I'm going to give it back. Marcy and I have had this ridiculous feud for years, and it's getting old. I just want to move on."
V's jaw dropped, and she sputtered a little more. "Can't moving on wait until after you've read the diary? Or at least given me a quick peek? 5 minutes, that's all I ask."
"I'm taking the higher road."
V rolled out her own sigh. "You're not going to budge, are you?"
"No."
A shadow fell over our towels.
"Mind if I join you, lovely ladies?"
We looked up to find Rickson standing over us in swim trunks and a tank, with a towel thrown over his shoulder. He had a gangly build that appeared surprisingly tough and resilient, a hawk nose and a shag of inky hair that fell across his forehead. A pair of black angel wings was tattooed on his left shoulder, and combined with a heavy 5 o'clock shadow, he looked like he was employed by the mob. charming, playful, and up to no good.
You made it, V said,
her smile lighting up her whole face. Rickson collapsed on the sand in front of us, elbow down, cheek propped on his fist.
What did I miss?
V wants me to swear a blood oath, I said. He cocked an eyebrow.
Sounds serious.
She thinks it will keep Patch out of my life. Rickson tilted his head back and laughed.
Good luck with that.
Hey now, V said. Blood oaths are serious stuff.
Rickson laid his hand intimately on her thigh and grinned affectionately at her, and I felt my chest ache with envy. Weeks ago, Patch would have touched me the same way. The irony was, weeks ago, V had probably felt the same way I did now, whenever she was forced to hang out with Patch and me. Knowing this should have made swallowing my jealousy a little bit easier, but the pain cut deep. Responding to Rickson, V bent forward, placing a kiss on his mouth. I averted my eyes, but it didn't dilute the envy that seemed to hang like a rock in my throat. Rickson cleared his voice.
Why don't I go buy us some cokes?
He asked, having the sensitivity to notice that he and V were making me uncomfortable.
Allow me,
V said, standing and dusting sand off her bottom.
I think Nora wants to talk to you, Rickson.
She made air quotes around the word talk.
I'd say, but I'm not a big fan of the subject matter.
I began uncomfortably, not sure what V was hinting at, but acutely aware that I wasn't going to like it. Rickson smiled at me expectantly.
Patch,
V said, clarifying things, only to make the air seem 10 times heavier than it already was. With that out of the way, she marched off. Rickson rubbed his chin.
You want to talk about Patch?
Not really, but you know V. Always there to make an uncomfortable situation 10 times worse, I muttered under my breath. Rickson laughed.
Good thing I'm not easily humiliated.
I wish I could say the same thing right now.
How are things?
He asked, trying to break the ice.
With Patch or in general?
Both. They've been better. Realizing there was a good chance Rickson would pass anything I said along to Patch, I quickly added, I'm on the upswing. But can I ask a personal question? It's about Patch, but if you don't feel comfortable answering, I'm seriously okay with it.
Shoot!
Is he still my guardian angel? A while back after a fight, I told him I didn't want him to be. But I'm not sure where we stand. Is he no longer my guardian simply because I said that's what I wanted?
He's still assigned to you.
How come he's never around anymore?
Rickson's eyes glinted.
You broke up with him, remember? It's awkward for him. Most guys don't relish the idea of hanging around an ex any longer than they have to. That, and I know he said the archangels are breathing down his neck. He's bending over backward to keep things strictly professional.
So he's still protecting me?
Sure, just from behind the scenes.
Who was in charge of matching him to me?
Rickson shrugged.
The archangels.
Is there any way to let them know I'd like to be reassigned? It's not working out very well. Not since the breakup, anyway. Not working out. It was tearing me up inside. All this touch and go, seeing him but not being able to have him, was devastating. He ran his thumb along his lip.
I can tell you what I know, but there's a good chance the information's dated. It's been a while since I was in the loop.
Ironically, you're ready for this. You have to swear a blood oath.
Is this a joke?
You cut your palm and shake a few drops of blood into the dust of the earth. Not carpet or concrete. Dirt. Then you swear the oath, acknowledging to heaven that you're not afraid to shed your own blood. From dust you came, and to dust you go. In saying the oath, you give up your right to a guardian angel, and announce that you accept your fate, without heaven's help. Keep in mind, I'm not advocating it. They gave you a guardian, and for good reason. Someone upstairs thinks you're in danger. I'm going with my gut on this one. But I think it's more than a paranoid hunch.
Not exactly a newsflash. I could feel something dark pressing against my world, threatening to eclipse it. The phantom behind my father's reappearing ghost, most notably. I was struck by a thought. What if the person who's after me is also my guardian angel? I asked slowly.
Rickson gave a yap of laughter.
Patch!
He didn't sound like it was even a possibility. No surprise there. Rickson had been through everything with Patch. Even if Patch was guilty, Rickson would stand by his side, blind loyalty above all else.
If he was trying to hurt me, would someone know? I asked.
The archangels, the angels of death? Dobria knew when people were close to death. Could another angel of death stop Patch before it's too late?
If you're doubting Patch, you've got the wrong guy.
His tone had cooled.
I know him better than you. He takes his job as guardian seriously.
But if Patch wanted to kill me, he'd crafted the perfect murder, hadn't he? He was my guardian angel. He was charged with keeping me safe. No one would suspect him. But he'd already had his chance to kill me, and he hadn't taken it. He'd sacrificed the one thing he wanted most of all, a human body, to save my life. He wouldn't do that if he wanted me dead.
Would he?
I shook off my suspicions. Rickson was right. Suspecting Patch was ridiculous at this point.
Is he happy with Marcy? I clamped my mouth shut. I hadn't meant to ask the question in the first place. It had spilled out in the moment. A blush brushed my cheeks.
Rickson watched me, clearly giving his answer some thought.
Patch is the closest thing I've got to family. And I love that guy like a brother. But he's not right for you. I know it. He knows it. And deep down, I think you know it, too. Maybe you don't want to hear this, but he and Marcy are alike. They're cut from the same cloth. Patch should be allowed to have a little fun. And he can. Marcy doesn't love him. Nothing she feels for him is going to tip off the archangels.
We sat in silence, and I struggled to stuff my emotions deep down. I'd tipped off the archangels, in other words. My feelings for Patch were what exposed us. It was nothing Patch had done or said, it was all me. According to Rickson's explanation, Patch had never loved me. He'd never reciprocated. I didn't want to accept it. I wanted Patch to have cared about me as much as I cared about him. I didn't want to think I'd been nothing more than entertainment, a way to pass the time. There was one more question I desperately wanted to ask Rickson. If Patch and I were still on good terms, I would have asked him, but that was a moot point now. Rickson was just as worldly as Patch, however. He knew things other people didn't, particularly when it came to fallen angels and Nephilim, and what he didn't know, he could find out. Right now, my best hope at finding the Black Hand was through Rickson. I moistened my lips and decided to get the question over with. Have you ever heard of the Black Hand? Rickson flinched. He studied me in silence a moment before his face blazed with amusement.
Is this a joke? I haven't heard that name in a long time. I thought Patch didn't like to be called it. Did he tell you about it then?
A slow freeze gripped my heart. I'd been on the brink of telling Rickson about the envelope with the iron ring and note claiming the Black Hand killed my father, but found myself grasping for a new response.
The Black Hand is Patch's nickname?
He hasn't gone by it in years. Not since I started calling him Patch. He never liked the Black Hand. He scratched his cheek. Those were back in the days when we took jobs as mercenaries for the French king. 18th century Black Ops. Enjoyable stint. Good money. I might as well have been slapped across the face. The whole moment felt unbalanced, tipped on its side. Rickson's words ran over me in a blur, as if he was speaking in a foreign language, and I couldn't keep up. I was immediately bombarded with doubts. Not Patch. He hadn't killed my dad. Anyone else, but not him. Slowly the doubts began to fall by the wayside, replaced by other thoughts. I found myself picking through facts, analyzing for evidence. The night I gave Patch my ring, the moment I'd said my dad had given it to me, he insisted he couldn't take it, almost adamantly so. And the mere name, the Black Hand, it was fitting, almost too fitting. Forcing myself to hang on a few more moments, holding my emotions carefully in check, I selected my next words carefully. "You know what I regret most?" I said, my tone as casual as I could make it. "It's the stupidest thing, and you'll probably laugh." To make my story convincing, I pulled a trivial laugh up from someplace deep inside me that I didn't even know existed. I left my favorite sweatshirt at his house. "It's from Oxford, my dream school," I explained. "My dad picked it up for me when he went to England, so it means a lot."
"You were at Patch's place?"
He sounded genuinely surprised.
"Just once. My mom was home, so we drove over to his place to watch a movie. I left my sweatshirt on the sofa."
I knew I was walking a dangerous line. The more details I revealed about Patch's house, the higher the chance something wouldn't match up,
and my cover would be blown. But along the same lines, if I was too vague, I was scared it would tip Rickson off that I was lying.
I'm impressed. He likes to keep his home address off the radar.
And why was that? I wondered. What was he hiding? Why was Rickson the only person allowed into Patch's inner sanctum? What could he share with Rickson but no one else? Had he never allowed me inside because he knew something I'd see there would unravel the truth? That he was responsible for murdering my dad?
Getting the sweatshirt back would mean a lot to me, I said. I felt somehow removed, as if I was watching myself converse with Rickson from several feet away. Someone stronger, more clever and contained was saying the words rolling from my mouth. I was not that person. I was the girl who felt herself crumbling into pieces as fine as the sand beneath her feet.
Head over first thing in the morning. Patch leaves early, but if you're there by 6:30, you should catch him.
I don't want to have to do it face to face.
Want me to pick up the sweatshirt next time I'm over? I'm sure I'll be over there tomorrow night, this weekend at the latest.
I'd like to get it sooner rather than later. My mom keeps asking about it. Patch gave me a key, and as long as he hasn't changed the locks, I could still get in. Trouble is, it was dark when we drove over, and I don't remember how to get to his place. I didn't pay attention because I wasn't planning on having to drive back and get my sweatshirt post-breakup.
Swarthmore, near the industrial district.
My mind netted this information. If his place was near the industrial district, I was betting he lived in one of the brick apartment buildings on the edge of Old Town Coldwater. There wasn't much else to choose from unless he'd taken up residence in one of the abandoned factories or vagabond shacks by the river, which seemed doubtful. I smiled, hoping I appeared relaxed. I knew it was over by the river somewhere. Top floor, right? I said, taking a stab in the dark. It seemed to me Patch wouldn't want to hear his neighbors stomping around above him.
Yeah, Rickson said. Number 34.
Do you think Patch will be home tonight? I don't want to bump into him, especially if he's there with Marcy. I just want to get the sweatshirt and get out.
Rickson coughed into his fist.
No, you should be good. He scratched his cheek and cast me a nervous, almost pitying look.
V and I are actually meeting up with Patch and Marcy for a movie tonight.
I felt my spine stiffen. The air in my lungs seemed to shatter. And then, just when I felt all semblance of my carefully controlled emotions fleeing, I was speaking clearly again. I had to.
Does V know? I'm still trying to figure out how to break the news.
Break the news about what?
Rickson and I both swung around as V plopped down with a cardboard crate of Cokes.
A surprise, Rickson said. I've got something planned for tonight.
V grinned.
A clue, please.
Rickson and I shared a quick glance, but I looked away. I didn't want any part of this. Besides, I'd already tuned out. My thoughts were robotically sifting through this new information. Tonight. Patch and Marcy. A date. Patch's apartment would be empty. I had to get in.
Chapter 16. 3 hours later, the fronts of V's thighs were toasted red, the tops of her feet were blistered, and her face was swollen with heat. Rickson had taken off an hour ago, and V and I were lugging the umbrella and beach tote up the alley branching off Old Orchard Street.
I feel funny, V said. Like I'm going to pass out. Maybe I should have gone easy on the baby oil.
I was lightheaded and uncomfortably warm, too, but it didn't have anything to do with the weather. A headache sliced down the center of my skull. I kept trying to swallow the bad taste in my mouth, but the more I swallowed, the queasier my stomach grew. The name, The Black Hand, skipped around my mind like it was taunting me to give it my full attention, stabbing its nails into my headache every time I tried to ignore it. I couldn't think about it now, in front of V, having enough foresight to know I'd shatter the moment I did. I had to juggle the pain a little longer, tossing it up in the air every time it threatened to crash down. I clung to the safety of numb devastation, pushing the inevitable off as long as I could.
Patch. The Black Hand. It couldn't be.
V came to a halt.
What is that?
We were standing in the parking lot at the rear of the bookstore a few feet from the neon, and we were staring at the large piece of metal attached to the left rear tire.
I think it's a car boot, I said.
I can see that. What's it doing on my car?
I guess when they say violators will be towed, they mean it.
Don't get smart with me. What are we going to do now?
Call Rickson? I suggested.
He's not going to be very happy about having to drive all the way back out here. What about your mom? Is she back in town?
Not yet. How about your parents?
V sat on the curb and buried her face in her hands. It probably costs a fortune to get a car boot removed. This will be the last straw. My mom's going to ship me off to a monastery.
I took a seat beside her, and together we pondered our options.
Don't we have any other friends? V asked. Someone we could call for a ride without feeling too guilty? I wouldn't feel guilty about making Marcy drive all the way out here, but I'm pretty sure she wouldn't do it. Not for us. Especially not for us.
You're friends with Scott. Think he'd come get us?
Hold on a minute. Isn't that Patch's Jeep?
I followed V's gaze down the opposite end of the alley. It fed into Imperial Street, and sure enough, parked on the far side of Imperial was a shiny black Jeep Commander. The windows were tinted, a glare of sun reflecting off them. My heart accelerated. I couldn't run into Patch. Not here. Not yet. Not when the only thing keeping me from breaking down sobbing was a carefully constructed dam whose foundation cracked deeper with every passing second.
He must be here somewhere, V said. Text him and tell him we're stranded. I might not like him, but I'll use him if it gets me a ride home.
I'd text Marcy before I'd text Patch. I hoped V didn't detect the strange, dull note of distress and loathing in my voice.
The Black Hand. The Black Hand. Not Patch. Please not Patch. A mistake. An explanation.
The headache seared as if my own body was warning me to stop this line of thinking for my own safety.
Who else can we call? V said.
We both knew who we could call. Absolutely no one. We were lame, friendless people. No one owed us a favor. The only person who would drop everything to come to my rescue was sitting beside me, and vice versa. I directed my attention back to the Jeep. For no reason whatsoever, I stood. I'm driving the Jeep home. I wasn't sure what kind of statement I intended to send to Patch. An eye for an eye? You hurt me, I'll hurt you. Or maybe, this is only the start, if you had anything to do with my dad's death.
Is Patch going to be mad when he figures out you stole his Jeep? V said.
I don't care. I'm not going to sit here all evening.
I have a bad feeling about this, V said. I don't like Patch on a normal day, never mind when he's got his temper on.
What happened to your sense of adventure?
A fierce desire had taken control of me, and I wanted nothing more than to take the Jeep and send Patch a message. I envisioned bumping the Jeep into a tree. Not hard enough to deploy the airbags, just hard enough to leave a dent. A little memento for me. A warning.
My sense of adventure stops short of a kamikaze suicide mission, said V. It's not going to be pretty when he figures out it was you. The logical voice in my head might have instructed me to back away for a moment, but all logic had left me. If he'd hurt my family, if he'd destroyed my family, if he'd lied to me...
Do you even know how to boost a car? V asked.
Patch taught me.
She didn't look convinced. You mean you saw Patch steal a car, and now you think you'll give it a try?
I strode down the alley toward Imperial Street, with V jogging close behind. I checked for traffic, then crossed to the Jeep. I tried the door latch. Locked.
Nobody's home, V said, cupping her hands around her eyes to peer inside. I think we should walk away.
Come on, Nora, back away from the Jeep.
We need a ride. We're stranded.
We still have two legs, lefty and righty. Mine are in the mood for exercise. They feel like a nice long walk.
Are you crazy? She shrieked.
I was standing with the tip of the beach umbrella aimed at the driver's side window.
What?
I said. We have to get in.
Put the umbrella down. You're going to draw a lot of negative attention if you smash out the window. What's gotten into you?
She said, watching me wild-eyed. A vision flashed across my mind. I saw Patch standing over my dad, gun in hand. The sound of a shot ripped the silence. I braced my hands on my knees and leaned over, feeling tears sting behind my eyes. The ground lurched into a nauseating spin. Sweat curved trails down the sides of my face. I was being smothered, as if all oxygen had suddenly evaporated from the air. The more I tried to draw air, the more paralyzed my lungs became. V was shouting at me, but it came from far away,
an underwater sound. All of a sudden, the ground halted. I took 3 sharp breaths. V was ordering me to sit, yelling something about heat exhaustion. I pulled free from her grip. "I'm okay," I said, holding up a hand when she came for me again. "I'm okay." To show her I was fine, I bent to pick up my tote, which I must have dropped, and it was then that I saw the spare key to the Jeep gleaming gold in the bottom, the one I'd stolen from Marcy's bedroom the night of her party. "I have a key to the Jeep," I said, the words surprising even me. A frown mark stretched across V's forehead. "Patch never asked for it back?" "He never gave it to me. I found it in Marcy's room Tuesday night."
"Whoa."
I shoved the key in the lock, climbed in, and sat in the driver's seat. Then I adjusted the seat forward, cranked the ignition, and gripped the steering wheel with both hands. Despite the heat, my hands were cold and jittery.
"You're not thinking about doing more damage than just driving this thing home, are you?"
V asked, buckling herself into shotgun.
"Because the vein in your temple is throbbing, and the last time I saw it do that was right before you clipped Marcy in the jaw at the devil's handbag."
I licked my lips, which felt sandpapery and rubbery at the same time. "He gave Marcy a spare to the Jeep. I should park this thing in the ocean 20 feet under."
"Maybe he had a really good reason," V said nervously.
I gave a high, slight laugh.
"I won't do anything to it until after I drop you off."
I cranked the wheel to the left and peeled onto the street.
"You swear to add that disclaimer when you try explaining to Patch why you stole his Jeep?"
"I'm not stealing it. We're stranded. This is called borrowing."
"This is called you're crazy."
I could feel V's bewilderment at my anger. I could see irrational in the way she stared at me. Maybe I was irrational. Maybe I'd pushed things over the edge. 2 people can have the same nickname, I thought, trying to convince myself. They could. They could. They could. They could. I hoped the more I said it, the more I'd come to believe it, but the place that I reserved in my heart for trust felt hollow.
"Let's get out of here," V said, using a wary, frightened voice she never used with me. "We have lemonade at my place. After that, we could watch TV. Maybe take a nap. Don't you have to work tonight?"
I was about to tell her that Roberta hadn't scheduled me tonight when I tapped the brake.
"What's that?"
V followed my gaze. She bent forward, pulling a scrap of pink fabric off the dash. She dangled the French bikini top between us. We looked at each other, and we were both thinking the same thing. Marcy. No doubt about it, she was here with Patch, right now, on the beach, lying on the sand, doing who knows what else. A violent, traitorous surge of hate spiked through me. I hated him, and I hated myself for adding my name to the list of girls he'd seduced, then betrayed. A raw desire to rectify my ignorance gripped me. I wasn't going to be just another girl. He couldn't make me disappear. If he was the Black Hand, I would find out, and if he'd had anything to do with my dad's death, I would make him pay.
"He can find his own ride home," I said through a quivering jaw.
I punched the gas, laying down a stretch of rubber on the street. Hours later, I stood in front of the fridge, door open, surveying the contents, looking for something that could pass as dinner. When nothing popped out at me, I moved to the narrow pantry kitty corner to the fridge and did the same thing. I settled on a box of bowtie pasta and a jar of sausage spaghetti sauce. When the stove timer beeped, I drained the pasta, poured myself a bowl, and stuck the sauce in the microwave. We were out of Parmesan, so I grated cheddar and called it good. The microwave chimed, and I spooned layers of sauce and cheese on top of the pasta. As I turned to carry everything to the table, I found Patch leaning against it. The bowl of pasta nearly slipped through my fingers.
"How did you get in?" I asked.
"Might want to keep the door locked, especially when you're home alone."
His stance was relaxed, but his eyes were not. The color of black marble, they cut right through me. I had no doubt he knew I'd stolen the Jeep. Hard not to, since it was parked in the driveway. There were only so many places to hide a Jeep at a house surrounded by open fields on one side and impenetrable woodlands on the other. I hadn't been thinking about hiding when I'd pulled the Jeep into the driveway. I'd been consumed by sickening abhorrence and shock. Everything had come into sharp focus. His smooth words, his black, glinting eyes, his broad experience with lies, seduction, women. I'd fallen in love with the devil.
"You took the Jeep," Patch said. calm, but not happy. V parked in an illegal zone, and they put a boot on her car. We had to get home, and that's when we saw the Jeep across the street. My palms touched with sweat, but I didn't dare wipe them dry, not in front of Patch. He looked different tonight. More severe, hardened. The wan glow of the kitchen lights traced the cut of his cheekbones, and his black hair, tousled from a day at the beach, hung low across his forehead, nearly touching his obscenely long eyelashes. His mouth, which I'd always thought of as sensual, was turned up cynically on one side. It wasn't a warm smile.
"You couldn't call and give me a heads up?"
he asked. "I didn't have my phone."
"And V?"
"She doesn't have your number on her phone, and I couldn't remember your new number anyway. We didn't have a way to reach you."
"You don't have a key to the Jeep. How'd you get in?"
It was all I could do not to give him a traitorous look. "You're spare." I saw him trying to calculate where I was going with this. We both knew he'd never given me a spare. I watched him closely for any sign that he knew I was referring to Marcy's key, but the light of understanding never lit his eyes. Everything about him was controlled, impenetrable, unreadable.
"Which spare?"
he asked. This only made me angrier, because I'd expected him to know exactly which key I was talking about. How many spares did he have? How many other girls had a key to the Jeep stowed in their purses? "Your girlfriend," I said. "Or is that not enough of a clarification?"
"Let me see if I've got this. You stole the Jeep to get back at me for giving a spare to Marcy?"
"I stole the Jeep because V and I needed it," I said coolly. "There was a time when you were always there when I needed you. I thought maybe that was still true, but apparently I was wrong." Patch's eyes didn't waver from mine.
"Want to tell me what this is really about?"
When I didn't answer, he dragged out one of the kitchen chairs tucked under the table. He sat, arms crossed, legs stretched out languidly.
"I've got time."
The black hand, that's what this was really about. But I was scared to confront him because of what I might learn and how he might react. I felt sure that he had absolutely no idea how much I knew. If I accused him of being the Black Hand, there was no turning back. I would have to face the truth that held the power to break me down to my very soul. Patch raised his eyebrows.
"Silent treatment?"
"This is about telling the truth," I said. "Something you've never done." If he'd killed my dad, how could he have looked me in the eye all those times, telling me how sorry he was and never told me the truth? How could he kiss me, caress me, hold me in his arms, and live with himself?
"Something I've never done? From the day we met, I never lied to you. You didn't always like what I had to say, but I was always up front."
"You let me believe you loved me. A lie!"
"I'm sorry it felt like a lie."
He wasn't sorry. There was a look of stony fury in his gaze. He hated that I was calling him out. He wanted me to be like all the other girls and disappear into his past without so much as a peep. "If you felt anything for me, you wouldn't have moved on to Marcy in record time."
"And you didn't move on to Scott in record time? You'd rather have half a man than me?"
"Half a man? Scott is a person!"
"He's Nephilim."
He made a careless gesture in the direction of the front door.
"The Jeep has more value."
"Maybe he feels the same way about angels." He shrugged, lazy and arrogant.
"I doubt it. If it weren't for us, his race wouldn't exist."
"Frankenstein's monster didn't love him."
"And?"
"The Nephilim race is already seeking revenge on angels. Maybe this is only the beginning." Patch raised his ball cap and dragged a hand through his hair. From the look on his face, I got the impression that the situation was far more dangerous than I'd originally been led to believe. How close was the Nephilim race to overpowering fallen angels? Surely not by this Cheshvan. Patch couldn't mean that in less than 5 months swarms of fallen angels would invade and eventually kill tens of thousands of humans. But everything in the way he held himself, down to the very look in his eye, told me that was exactly what was in store. "What are you doing about it?" I asked, horrified. He picked up the glass of water I'd poured for myself and left on the table and took a drink.
"I've been told to stay out of it."
"By the archangels?"
"The Nephilim race is evil. They were never supposed to inhabit Earth. They exist because of the pride of fallen angels. The archangels want nothing to do with them. They're not going to step in where Nephilim are concerned."
"And all the humans who will die?"
"The archangels have their own plan.
Sometimes bad things have to happen before good things can.
Plan? What plan? To watch innocent people die?
The Nephilim are walking straight into a trap of their own making. If people have to die to annihilate the Nephilim race, the archangels will risk it.
The hairs on my scalp prickled. And you agree with them?
I'm a guardian angel now. My allegiance is to the archangels.
A blaze of killing hate rose in his eyes, and for one brief moment I believed it was directed at me, as if he blamed me for what he'd become. In my defense, I felt a wash of anger. Had he forgotten everything from that night? I'd sacrificed my life for him, and he rejected it. If he wanted to blame someone for his circumstances, it wasn't me.
How strong are the Nephilim? I asked.
Strong enough.
His voice was disturbingly devoid of concern.
They could hold off the fallen angels as early as this Heshvan, couldn't they?
He gave a nod.
I hugged myself to ward off a deep, sudden chill, but it was more psychological than physical.
You have to do something.
He shut his eyes.
If fallen angels can't possess Nephilim, they'll move on to humans, I said, trying to break through his hands-off attitude and reach his conscience.
That's what you said. Tens of thousands of humans. Maybe V, my mom, maybe me.
He still said nothing.
Don't you even care?
His eyes flicked to his watch and he pushed up from the table.
I hate to rush out of here when we've got unfinished business, but I'm late.
The spare key to the Jeep was lying in a dish on the sideboard and he pocketed it.
Thanks for the key. I'll add borrowing the Jeep to your tab.
I parked myself between him and the door.
My tab?
I got you home from the Z. Got you off Marcy's roof, and now I let you use my Jeep. I don't give out favors for free.
I was pretty sure he wasn't joking. In fact, I was pretty sure he was dead serious.
We can work it so you pay me after each individual favor, but I figured a tab would be easier.
His smile was a taunting curve. First class jerk, smug. I narrowed my eyes.
You're actually enjoying this, aren't you?
One of these days, I'm going to come to collect on the favors, and then I'll really be enjoying it.
You didn't loan me the Jeep, I argued. I stole it, and it wasn't a favor. I commandeered it.
He gave his watch a second glance.
We're going to have to finish this later. I've got to run.
That's right, I snapped. A movie with Marcy. Go have fun while my world hangs in the balance.
I told myself I wanted him to go. He deserved Marcy. I didn't care. I was tempted to hurl something after him. I thought about slamming the door at his back. But I wasn't going to let him go without asking the question that burned my every thought. I dug my teeth into the inside of my cheek to keep my voice from unraveling.
Do you know who killed my dad?
My voice was cold and controlled, and not my own. It was the voice of someone who was filled to the very tips of her fingers with hate, devastation, accusation.
Patch stopped with his back to me.
What happened that night?
I didn't bother trying to hide the desperation in my voice.
After a moment of silence, he said,
You're asking me like you think I might know.
I know you're the Black Hand. I shut my eyes briefly, feeling my whole body sway under a wave of nausea.
He looked over his shoulder. Who told you that?
Then it's true? I realized my hands were balled into fists at my sides, shaking violently. You're the Black Hand.
I watched his face, praying he'd somehow refute it.
The grandfather clock in the hall chimed the hour, a heavy, reverberating sound.
Get out!
I said. I wouldn't cry in front of him. I refused to. I wouldn't give him that satisfaction. He stood in place, his face cold with shadow, mildly satanic. The clock counted through the silence. 1, 2, 3.
I'll make you pay for it!
I said, my voice still oddly foreign. 4, 5.
I'll find a way. You deserve to go to hell. The only thing that could make me sorry is if the archangels beat me to it.
A flash of hot black crossed his eyes.
You deserve everything that's coming to you, I told him. Every time you kissed me and held me, knowing what you did to my dad.
I choked and turned away, falling apart when I could least afford it.
6. Go away.
I said, my voice quiet but not steady.
I looked up, glaring, intending to make Patch leave with the intensity of hate and loathing in my eyes, but I was alone in the hall. I glanced around, expecting him to have stepped out of my view, but he wasn't there. A strange silence settled in between the shadows, and I realized the grandfather clock had stopped beating. Its hands were frozen on the 6 and 12, having stopped the moment Patch left for good. Chapter 17. After Patch left, I traded out my beach cover-up for dark jeans and a tee, and zipped myself into a black Razorbill's windbreaker I'd won at last year's e-zine Christmas party. Even though the thought made my stomach swim uneasily, I had to look through Patch's apartment, and I had to do it tonight, before it was too late. It had been stupid to tell Patch I knew he was the Black Hand. It had come out in a moment of hostile recklessness. I'd lost my advantage of surprise. I doubted he saw me as a real threat. He probably found my promise to send him to hell darkly amusing. But I had information he'd clearly worked very hard to keep concealed. Based on everything I knew about the all-knowing, ever-watchful Archangels, it hadn't been easy keeping his involvement in my dad's murder from them. I couldn't send him to hell, but the Archangels could. If I found a way to contact them, his carefully crafted secret would be blown open. The Archangels were hunting for an excuse to banish him to hell. Well, I had a reason. My eyes watered and I blinked the tears hastily away. There was a time in my life when I never would have believed Patch capable of killing my dad. The idea would have been laughable, preposterous, offensive, but it only showed how cleverly and thoroughly he'd deceived me. Everything told me the apartment on Swarthmore was where he kept his secrets. It was his one vulnerability. Aside from Rickson, no one was allowed inside. Earlier today, when I'd mentioned to Rickson that I'd been there, he'd answered with genuine surprise. "He likes to keep his home address off the radar," he'd said. Had Patch managed to keep it off the Archangel's radar? It seemed highly unlikely, bordering on impossible, but Patch had proven that he was very good at finding a way around any obstacle placed in his path. If anyone was resourceful or clever enough to undermine the Archangels, it was Patch. I shuddered unexpectedly, as I wondered what he was keeping in his apartment. An ominous feeling that tickled my spine seemed to warn me not to go, but I owed it to my dad to bring his killer to justice. I located a flashlight under my bed and zipped it inside the front pouch of the windbreaker. As I was getting to my feet, Marcy's diary caught my eye. It was resting across a row of books on my bookshelf. I debated a moment, feeling a hole burn in my conscience. With a sigh, I tucked the diary alongside the flashlight, locked up behind me, and set out on foot. I walked the mile stretch to Beach, then caught a bus to Herring Street. I walked 3 blocks to Keat, hopped on another bus to Clementine, then walked on foot up the winding scenic hill leading into Marcy's neighborhood, which was about as close to posh as Coldwater came. The smell of fresh-cut grass and hydrangeas hung in the evening air, and traffic was non-existent. Cars were kept neatly tucked away in the garages, making the streets seem wider, cleaner. The windows of the white colonial houses reflected the blaze of the slow-setting sun, and I imagined families sitting down together for a late dinner behind the shutters. I bit my lip, startled by a sudden rush of inconsolable regret. My family would never sit down together for a meal again. 3 nights a week I ate dinner alone, or at V's. The other 4 nights, when my mom was home, we typically ate on trays in front of the TV. Because of Patch. I turned onto Brenchley, counting down houses to Marcy's. Her red Toyota 4Runner was parked in the drive, but I knew she wasn't home. Patch would have picked her up for the movie in the Jeep. I was cutting across the lawn, thinking I would leave the diary on the porch, when the front door opened. Marcy had her handbag slung over her shoulder, keys in hand, clearly on her way out. She froze in the doorway when she saw me. "What are you doing here?" she asked. I opened my mouth, 3 full seconds ticking by before the words came out. I didn't think you'd be home." She narrowed her eyes. "Well, I am. I thought you and Patch..." I was barely speaking coherently. The diary was in my arms in plain sight. Any minute Marcy would see it. "He canceled," she snapped at me, like it was none of my business. I hardly heard her. Any moment now she was going to see the diary. Like never before, I wanted to backpedal through time. I should have thought this through before coming. I should have counted on the chance that she'd be home.
I glanced nervously behind me, staring at the street as if it could somehow come to my rescue.
Marcy gasped, a rush of air between her teeth. What are you doing with my diary?
I spun around, cheeks flaming. She marched down the porch. She snatched the diary away and reflexively pinned it against her